all of you aren't paying attention to me anyway, so I don't mind if people walk around. They're only doing outwardly what they're really doing inwardly. One of the girls turned in a testimony, and I was very happy to have it from the standpoint that I think it gives us something to work on. I do want to mention that for your own sake, I wish you'd give your testimonies a title. I'm sure that if they ever use them, they'll want them titled, and should they ever be in any house organ, you want them titled, and if you use them where they're going to use you perhaps as a speaker at a young people's meeting, well, then they can say the title the week before, and it makes a little more interest. Now, this is the way you get a title. This is the way I get a title, shall I say it that way. When I go to write anything, I take a separate sheet of paper and put at the top of it title. And as I work, certain key thoughts will come to me and I will put them down. Presumably, at the end of the time that I finished my manuscript, I will also have a title. That's not always true. Then the next best way to get a title is to do what apparently they do at Time magazine. They look through, pick out three or four catchwords, and bring them up at the top of the page for a title. Beyond that, I can't give you any help in the thinking of titles. Titles are tricky. Titles are really what sell what you have to write. They amount to your headlines. They're important, but they're not easy. And if you wait till the last minute to think of your title, most likely you'll settle for what you can think of quick. Along with this matter of titles, I think it's interesting we had an article that was sent to us by one of our missionaries on Formosa, and I had to title it. So I thought, well, alliteration is the easiest way to get a title. So I very often use it. So I thought of Formosa, Frantic Field. And then there was nothing in the article that tied it in any respect with the title. So I wrote an extra paragraph and stuck it at the back end of her article. But that's what comes, you see, when somebody from the outside has to do your titling for you. Had she known and realized and thought as she went along, she would have thought of, we hope, a title that would have fitted. For our article on Alaska, and when I was doing my research, they spoke of it as being the last frontier of America. So I titled it The Last Frontier. Huh? And when I got down to headquarters, you know, I work at a headquarters too, and they'd look at me sometimes and they'd say, is that the best you can do? They decided that Alaska might be the last frontier as far as America was concerned, but it wasn't from Christian circles. So we're ending up calling the article A New Frontier. And pretty good under that. But titles are tricky. They're not easy. Be aware of them from the beginning, and then you'll do better. Right, this girl has no title. When we get through, if you think of them as you go along, will someone please suggest a title? I know she'd appreciate it. Have you ever stood on the corner and waited for a streetcar that never seems to come? Actually, your wait was probably no longer than 10 or 15 minutes. But can you imagine having to wait for 15 years? That seems like a very long wait. Yet that is how many years the Lord had to wait from the time I first accepted him as my Savior until I was willing to start living for him. It was under the faithful ministry of my Sunday school teachers when I was a little girl that I came to realize I was a sinner and had need of a Savior. My spiritual growth was very slight since I came from a home where only one parent was a Christian and we had no family worship of any kind. Some of my Christian friends took an interest in me when in my early 20s, and so at last all those wasted years of living for myself were ended, and the Lord had all my heart. the Lord took me through an intensive course in secretarial and office management training for a number of years to further prepare me for his next step. The last year and a half of this training period was the time I realized he wanted me in his service, and my, how hard it was to wait for him to open just the right door. However, it was worth waiting for, as in his own miraculous way, he gave me the rare privilege of working with Dick Hillis, former China Inland Missionary, for 17 years in the founding of a new missionary organization, Oriental Crusades. For 3.5 years, the Lord used me at headquarters office in Los Angeles, and when the groundwork had been laid in getting the office organized and established, he then called me on to an even further step in serving him, that of helping in the follow-up ministry of the Navigators, an organization that has labored closely with Orient Crusades in getting the job of systematic evangelism and synchronized follow-up done in many fields in the Orient. These past years of waiting on the Lord for guidance has taught me the importance of waiting and walking with Him step by step. His word has taught me to wait on the Lord. Patience, keep His word, obedience, and He shall exalt thee to inherit the land, reward, Psalm 37:34. Yes, it surely pays to wait on Him. For with the Lord to guide your life, you will make no mistakes, and you are assured of His reward. May I urge you now not to keep the Lord waiting in giving Him your whole heart. He can't use you until your heart willingly responds to Him. What's your theme?
Waiting.
I don't think Don't Miss the Streetcar was the full theme. It was just one phase of it. Did any title except the obvious one of Waiting occur to any of you? Oh, good. Yes.
Dwarf temporarily. Because several times she mentioned how that it had been those 15 years, mm-hmm. a long time between her second Lord
yes.
and when she refused to grow.
Dropped temporarily, the lack of growth. All right, it's clever to say dwarfed temporarily because the words are different. Actually, while you might use it for a title because titles are hard to think of, it's not a good title because it doesn't give the whole thought. It really is only the title of the first paragraph, isn't it? So be thankful you thought of it. Just be grateful to God any time you have a thought. They're rare. Anyone else think of a title? Yes.
Well, I thought you might put waiting and watching.
Yes, that's one step better than just waiting. I thought, of course, instantly as I was reading it, of waiting. But waiting and watching. Even the little alliteration, the extra thought, picks it one step higher.
The reward of waiting?
The reward of waiting. Yes, I think that's still better than yours, Percy, because it brings us closer to the end. And besides, it's a little hope more hopeful than waiting and watching. And we're a hopeful race of people. God seems to have planted hope in every heart. We'll read something quicker if we think there's a hope to it. Do we have any other titles? Yes.
How about an incomplete statement
for
a title?
They're good.
Not that this would be good for this, but like 15 years and then...
Yes, with three dots. Yes. No, actually, that's the most interesting title that's been suggested. 15 years and then, with your three dots. And the minute you get even one shade beyond the ordinary, you're more apt to get a reader. So your 15 years and then, of all the titles that have been suggested, that was the better one. Now, did she show you, did she prove my theory? Isn't her testimony better for having a theme than the ordinary way of starting, I was born in a Christian home, or I wasn't born in a Christian home? I went to the little theme there, the little color. And it isn't flowery in any sense of the word. Just attracts your interest and you think, well, here is going to be something a little better than the ordinary. And so you go into it. All right, now she starts with a very poor rhetorical question. I suppose you all guessed who it was because of the testimony, but I warned her ahead of time we were going to use her for an example. Have you ever stood on the corner and waited for a streetcar that never seemed to come? Well, inasmuch as everybody has probably done that, it's a poor rhetorical question. The better thing would be to say, remember the time you stood on the streetcar on the corner and the streetcar never came? Rhetorical questions are basically poor, because most of them are poor questions. The principle is still good, but they're seldom interesting. All right, then did you notice how she linked, after all those years of living for myself and the Lord had all my heart? Then she started her next paragraph with, the Lord took me through. She practiced her little narrative hook there. But this is some honeys. Here are a couple of her sentences. However, it was worth waiting for, as in his own miraculous way, he gave me the rare privilege of working with Dick Hillis, former China Inland missionary, for 17 years in the founding of a new missionary organization. How many words do you think there are in that sentence? 40. There's 40 in that sentence. All right. What should she have done? However, it was worth waiting, for in his own miraculous way, he gave me the rare privilege of working with Dick Hillis. He is a former China Inland Mission missionary for 17 years and founded a new missionary organization, Orient Crusade. You see, just the addition of he is. Throws it in there. Now, here's another nice sentence. I'd like to have you count the words in this. Now, don't stop me. I'm through. For 3.5 years, the Lord used me at the headquarters office in Los Angeles, and when the groundwork had been laid in getting the office organized and established, he then called me on to an even further step in serving him, that of helping in the follow-up ministry of the Navigators, an organization that has labored closely with Oriental Crusade in getting the job of systematic evangelism. How many words do you think? 82. She'll never do it again. I know she'll never do it again. She learned the hard way today. For 3.5 years, the Lord used me at the headquarter office in Los Angeles, period. When the groundwork had been laid in getting the office organized and established, he then led me on to an even further step in serving him. Period. I am helping in the follow-up ministry of the Navigators, an organization that has labored closely with Orient Crusades in getting the job of systematic evangelism and synchronized follow-up done in many fields of the Orient. Even broken down to 3 sentences, they're still fairly long, and at least acceptable. Now, of course, the reason why she did it, and I honestly believe it, was because she wrote it and gave it to me while it was hot without stopping to look at it. She could have caught some of these things herself, but I didn't want her to. I wanted the example and the privilege of pointing it out. It isn't that she's the only one that does it. She was the one who did it and turned it in. You will find the tendency is always towards the long sentence because you keep thinking and you and you if and you but, and after I get through writing anything, I have to go over and take a major portion of ands out and break up my sentences. I liked her application at the end. How much of it she would use, of course, would depend upon where the testimony was being used. If it were in a house organ, if you decided, for instance, in Navanews, which I certainly wouldn't suggest, you have too many people, but if you decide to run a testimony a month, you just use the page without the application. But I told her to write her application so that she'd have it tied in, and then she'd have it ready in her heart and soul if she was going to give it someplace. I would like to see her amplify the paragraph about exactly what she did with both Orient Crusade and with the Navigators, because I'm sure all of you run into the situation that people have only the most vague idea of what you do at headquarters. I don't know what they think of you, but I'm sure they don't know. We run all the time. We did run a series of articles in our magazine, but our office staff is so much shorter than yours. We ran everyone who'd been with the organization and worked at headquarters over 2 years, ran their testimony. And we did it simply because we wanted to get the headquarters picture in. And so we ran the testimony with amplifications, what they did. We used it. And of course, you see that way from the literature department, someone from the bailing. And I started to say when they got to me, they quit, but they didn't. We went on to one more. All right. Any questions along this line of your testimony? The class tomorrow will be from 11 to 12. You see, you can truly get out working early. And if any of you have any testimonies, turn them in to me anytime between now and then, and I'll be glad to go over them. And if we see anything that we think will be rewarding to the other people, well, we'll read them in class. We're going to spend the time that I have left discussing the article in general. The green sheet first, so my sister's right. What kind of articles do I mean? Follow this outline. Basically, anything you write. Those of you who are ministers and whom God gives a devotional message to will follow it. It is the outline, for instance, that if Roy Robinson was my pupil, which he isn't, that he would use in doing steering straight, or whoever else does steering straight. You don't have the same one every month, do you? But it's that type. That's what the outline is for. What other type of article will they be writing, Betty, that they could use it? You know what they're writing around here, besides devotional articles.
It'll be a
summary
church paper.
Oh, yes. Yes, if you write for church papers. It's a basic outline for anything that you will write, and I teach it in general. There would be variations of it, of course. Yes. All right, now this green sheet, I just want you to look at briefly. I want you all to know about it. You're going to turn in copy, whether it's to your church paper or to the, Christian Life. I see no reason why you shouldn't do it properly. Always use a typewriter. Suppose you haven't got a typewriter. You can't get one, and you've still got to turn it in. Write slowly. If you will write slowly, in most cases, your handwriting will be readable. I think you'll find most of you who say, oh, well, no one can read my handwriting. It's like myself. I don't write slowly, so it scrawls all over the page. 20-pound bond paper, double space. One side of the paper, wide margins. Why wide margins? Edification, correction. And of course, your name. One of you boys just came up and gave me his testimony to look at. He had to stop and write his name before he gave it to me. But you have to put your name on things. All right, the total number of words. That helps an editor to figure out his space. Some church paperback east wrote and said, please write me a testimony of one of the missionaries. I wrote a brief testimony, dug our stuff out of the file, and wrote back and said, if you had given me a word count, I would have known better how much to send you. A word count is So, yes, Francis is not, and I know why, because Francis edited a house organ at one time. And you certainly, like mad, had to cut plenty of the articles that came in, didn't you?
Yes, we didn't quite fit them for pages.
Yes. So Francis knows the problem. All right, you don't count them like I did that sentence, you know, word for word. Average. She's got 80 words on 6 lines, so she probably runs, 12 words to a line. And you just do an average word count. And every word counts, whether it's I or A, it counts just the same as subsequently, because it's an average word count and one of them picks up the other. And then your title. Under your title, your name. So that you can have the proper credit. Not that we're worrying about you getting the credit, but the person ought to know who to blame for the article, shouldn't they? And then what to type on the other pages. This thing down here, as this matter of rights, we'll not take time to go into it. None of you have reached the place where you're concerned about rights. I just want you to know as you go on in Christian work that there is such a thing as many rights in a manuscript. I've had members of mission boards who really ought to know, I mean they were on the executive committee, and maybe they had an article and it had been printed in one magazine, and then they want to know if they could turn around and print it in a leaflet or a brochure. And so I'd say to them, well, what rights did you sell or give to the magazine? And they usually don't know. It doesn't matter much at first. You're just glad to get anything in print. But, for instance, if anything, if Dawson Trotman wrote anything, he should know definitely what rights they're taking, because what he writes is of sufficient import that you might want to turn around and do it in brochure form. And so if you submit something to a magazine, have an understanding. And, by the way, they call them first serial rights. The first time it's printed in a magazine. I don't know why. And then, of course, you have, you know, I say television rights, radio rights, all the rest. So you're going to write a devotional article. The first thing you want to sit down and write out is your summary sentence. Your summary sentence. Think it through. What one truth are you trying to present? In this little testimony of Pat, she might have used for her summary sentence that if we wait on God, He will reward us, because actually that was the truth that she brought out in it. When I was teaching this lesson the last time, I evidently was working on something for Father's Day coming up in June. And my theme was, Dad is just as important to the child as mother. And it was to directed towards other adults on their attitude towards father. I think there's a tendency in the United States today to belittle Dad, to give him second place, and we become a mother-conscious nature. We had Mother's Day far before we had Father's Day. And I think, a child needs his mother. A child needs his father, too. I don't think there's any choice. They need them both. And then for my own thinking, I put beneath it, so I wouldn't go off on a sidetrack, and it's very easy to go off on one. not his attitude towards the children or the children's attitude towards him. I was writing only on the subject of the attitude of other adults towards fathers. You have to do your preliminary thinking. Think not only to know what you're going to write, but think to eliminate. Think to know what you're not going to cover. You can only get over one thought in an article, whether it's 500 words or 5,000 words. And as Jim, maybe he's going to write a book for us. Only one thought in a chapter, Jim. Jim, I suggested to Jim, and I still hope he'll do it, that he write me 300 words, devotional for juniors, using fishing as his theme. This is the outline that you'll use. All right, with 300 words, naturally, you're going to kind of accordion-like work the outline. But this is it. All right. Now, you don't blissfully write your theme then at the beginning of your article to show people what you're going to do. That's for your thinking. For your thinking. And you're going to follow this outline here of lead, main point, body of article, and conclusion. And this particular sentence, which you worked up to clarify your thinking, you may or may not include in the second point. Often, it fits in there and is helpful. All right, this is our outline here. When I first took the course that taught me this outline, I went home and I typed it on a card, and you can see how yellow it is from age, but I typed it on a card and put it up with a thumbtack over my desk. I got this outline from Don Hoke, now a missionary in Japan, establishing a college over there. And if I'm a writer today, it's because of this outline. I varied it. I have lead, he had introduction. I have action step, he had projection step. And he had thesis instead of main point. I've tried to work it down a little. But if you really intend to write anything, or write to any extent, type your outline and follow it, this particular outline. This article here, I cut out of the Writer's Digest, and it is written by the author of the New Yorker magazine, a very swanky, worldly magazine, and here's his outline, practically the same thing. All right, your lead, I don't think, pause a minute, there's any question on this. It's your lead, two or three paragraphs. Your main point or theme, two or three sentences. The body of the article, of course, is where you have your variation of length, and then your conclusion. All right, now we'll discuss this matter of the lead. Trying to see which one I have here that... Oh, I like this one, I think. One by Dr. John Brown. In a tabernacle meeting in Fresno, California, years ago, a group of former church people from a Midwestern state came to me at the close of the service with the challenge, "Do you know why we've not joined the church here in this city?" When I assured them that I did not, The spokesman most emphatically said, "The church out here is not what it was back where we came from." My reply, with a smile, of course, was, "And do you know why?" When they answered in the negative, I said, "Because the wrong crowd moved out here when you moved. If you'd stayed home and sent your pa and ma, they'd have made church life out here what it was back in the town you moved from." A little narrative. "I suppose you think I'm awful," she confessed, without lowering her eyes. "But I don't read my Bible every day. How can I with four children to cook for and so forth?" This made me gasp, for I regarded the woman who said it as an outstanding Christian. 2 days later, my ears were stung by a like admission from a mother who had graduated from Bible school. Since then, I've run across dozens of good Christians who rate little or no better. People who should issue themselves an order, "Be fair to your Bible." On the white mantel in the living room of our parsonage home stood a small trailing vine which fell gracefully in various links over the side of the silver vase. I was pleased with the effect it created in the room, the graciousness of its greenness and the upturned strands. Many people commented on how nicely it grew there and what life it lent to the color scheme of the room. But my beauty-seeking fingers could not let the vine alone. One morning while dusting, I took it to the kitchen for fresh water and spent precious minutes rearranging the green strand which drew life from the water in the vase. Try as I would, I could not seem to recreate the beauty which had been brought about by the seeking of the vine for sunlight. So at last, in chagrin, I set it back in its accustomed place on the mantel. Though freshly watered, it lacked what I and others had admired so much, the beauty of its arrangement. Then to my ever-hungry heart, God spoke a lesson so simple that I knew it was of the Holy Spirit. How greatly we need to feed our souls upon the living water, Christ Himself, and let Him arrange our lives as He sees fit. Think through your theme and then find a little illustration. There's so many of them. The world abounds in simple illustrations. And the little story, the little brief narrative, catches the attention so easily and so quickly. You know, all of you. You sit there asleep until all of a sudden the minister tells a little illustration, and then you come to and listen to the illustration. If he starts with an illustration or you start your article with an illustration, you're more apt to stay awake. And sounds like I'm teaching my lesson on the letter all over again, doesn't it? And I suppose I am. The same basic principles run straight through the whole 2-year course. Your arresting statement? The banker was astonished at the bishop. It's an article on raising money. The banker was astonished at the bishop. See, the bishop knew how to raise money. Someone has said the Japanese may die by harakiri, but the Westerners commit mass suicide by hurry-scurry. Jesus was a refugee. When? Come. When was he? Yeah. But unless you think of it, life speaks 2,796 languages and thousands of dialects. That's the actual count of the world languages by the French Academy in 1933. Probably isn't even up to date. If you don't discipline your child in the high chair, the time may come when the state will discipline him in the electric chair. Under your heading of your arresting statement should come also the quotation. Very often you can find somebody who has said what you want to say, only say it better. On his visit to the United States, Alex de Tocqueville noticed an astonishing native custom. These Americans are the most peculiar people in the world. You will not believe it when I tell you how they behave, he wrote. In a local community in their country, a citizen may conceive of some need which is not being met. What does he do? He goes across the street and discusses it with his neighbor, and then what happens? A committee comes into existence. The committee begins functioning on behalf of that need, and you won't even believe it, but it's true. All this is done without reference to any bureaucrat. All this is done by the private citizen on his own initiative. The health of a democratic society may be measured by the quality of the functions performed by private citizens. This was noted 123 years ago, and accurately reported, it is still a distinguishable American trait. United States generosity. Now, this is from Time magazine, but you see they have first caught your interest with the quote, and then they're going into their theme. The article is on organized charity. And they go into the theme of their article. United States generosity coupled with a native knack for organization has made United States philanthropy one of the wonders of the land. About $4 billion a year now cascade from private United States pockets and purses into charities. $4 billion a year, think of it. It's a lot of money to spend on somebody besides yourself. The annual open season for philanthropies is now in full swing with upwards of 200,000 fundraising hunters, most of them amateurs, on the prowl, and the national charitable spirit is at flood tide. And then it goes to explain, it goes into the main point, where he explains the Rockefeller Fund, the fourth largest industry, the community chest, the Salvation Army. Takes up each point, and let's see if they have a conclusion step. Oh, yes. While these more or less restrained conflicts rage, the American way of supermarket charity spreads around the world. There are today more than 500 community chests in other countries, including South Africa, Japan, and British West Indies. As the idea grows, the specter of human want recedes, and the health of democratic societies improved. Many people in many corners of the world hold that American charity is the heartbeat of American greatness. I'm not going to offer to loan you anything more. I'm leaving tomorrow, but you really ought to read the article. Because, of course, they lump all Christian organizations into charity. The minute they include the Salvation Army and some of those. And I was telling one of my unsaved friends about a faith missionary, and they said, oh, she lives on charity. But that's the only way they have to see it from a their standpoint. All right, your rhetorical question. Will this be the last Christmas of peace on earth? Written by Rosa, our boy from Young Life isn't here. This was written by Rosa Osterman. Newsweek of December 25th asks the question, and then in the next sentence continues, yes. That was in 1950. That was the reluctant but firm conclusion in the authoritative circles in Washington. Was that the last Christmas of peace on earth? This is the type of rhetorical question. If you can write it with compassion, it's fine. It's just that we so seldom do as good a job on it. Have you ever been in the Holy Land? Have you seen in the streets of Jerusalem the many friendless, blind beggars with outstretched hands? Have you seen the unspeakable poverty of old women fighting dogs in the gutter for a crust of bread? Have you seen the fatherless waif sleeping at night in the street? Could use your same type of opening if you were going to write about the Orient. Then this, how can I, with my present income and resources, do still more to support the kingdom of Christ on earth? It's a positive thought. It isn't a thought you don't want to give more, do you? But how can you do it? Did you ever want to wear that school letter on your chest and wonder why you were too light for football and too short for basketball? How did the early Christian church have such extraordinary success as to win at least one-fifth of the people in the Roman Empire in 3 centuries? We're not winning them at that rate anymore, are we? In modern times, it is true, we have witnessed an even greater success in several small areas. It even doesn't go on to say how they did it. It just says that they did it. They used their own homes, financed their own campaigns, risked their own lives. You're going to start with a little story, an arresting sentence, a quotation, a rhetorical question, if it is warm, or a bit of dialogue. This is by J. Edwin Orr, and it's priceless. You know, Chaplain, said the pilot, I approve of your work, but I don't believe in it. I made a swipe at a mosquito before I asked him what he meant. Well, you see, he explained, some of these GIs get scared in an air raid, and they need a bit of religion to help them, but I'm an educated man, and I don't believe in God, and so I don't need any religion to help me, but I appreciate what you're doing for the other guys. You don't believe in God, I asked? No, you see, I think that God is a term that men use to cover their ignorance, and so the more a fellow's educated, the less he needs God. See? I see, said I. You mean that you're an atheist and there is no God. Well then, I want to ask you a couple of questions. Shoot, said the captain, chewing gum rhythmically. Do you happen to know everything? Are you kidding, said the pilot. On the contrary. Oh, well, if Albert Einstein admits that the world scientists are on the fringe of knowledge, I guess I can be quite modest and admit that I don't know so much. Well, if you admit that you don't know everything, then is it possible that God could exist outside the realm of your knowledge? That's all I'm going to read you. I'm proving a point. I'm not trying to interest you in the article.
Why is that pretty?
I assure you that had Orr said, started his article by saying, it is possible to prove the existence of God by proving that a person does not, that no person on earth knows everything. It'd have been flat, wouldn't it? Just this. Riding on a streetcar in Chicago one day, I sat next to a man who was reading a Yiddish newspaper. When he put down the paper, I said, I see you're Jewish. I am, he replied. Who is the greatest Jew living today? He mentioned Rothschild, Einstein, and one or two others, but I kept shaking my head in the negative. Finally, he asked, well, who do you mean? The Lord Jesus Christ. Oh, he's not living, he's dead. Yes, he died for you and me, but 3 days after they buried him, he rose from the dead. So the greatest living Jew today is... And this is just how brief you can use a little bit of dialogue. A man entered a store to buy a compass. What kind do you want? Asked the girl. We have compasses for drawing circles, but not for going places. And then into, of course, a value of having the Word of God as a compass for going places. Be sure when you're hunting around for an opening, you've taken the course and you're going to do this thing conscientiously. Don't just be clever. Don't just use it because it's smart and cute. If it doesn't fit what you're going to say, perhaps you can vary it a little, but if you can't vary it so that it fits what you're going to say, don't use it. Don't be clever just to be clever. Tell me, asked the British visitor, do your Negroes play golf? The question put to the United States businessman brought a stammering yes. Yes, said the businessman. He supposed that United States Negroes played golf, but he'd never seen one with a club in his hand. Come to think of it, he'd seen a picture of Joe Louis on a golf course. But he had no idea at what club Joe could play. This incident illustrates how little American citizens generally know about their colored fellow citizens. And it also illustrates, in a very real way, the position of the Negro. You've got at least to the place where you can ask if he plays golf. But you haven't got to the place where very many of them can play golf. Then it goes on to mention the 5 cities in the United States where Negroes are allowed to play on the public golf courses. Atlanta, New Orleans, Seattle, Chicago, and New York. But the point is how beautifully the illustration fitted. Not, they didn't just use any illustration about a Negro. They found an illustration that exactly typified the place of the Negro in America today. You don't do it overnight, this matter of finding illustrations. You suddenly sit down and you want to write something, for instance, on humility. No, you don't do it that way. You decide that someday you're going to write on humility and you have a folder and you put humility up there in the corner, and every time you hear anything about humility or any time the Lord gives you a thought on humility, you write it on a sheet of paper and you throw it in there. And then the day comes when you've got enough notes and you're ready to write your article. Yes, sir.
Because
there are times just to do it, and yet also you can run it into the ground because it's sloppy writing. Easy to do. Oh. This is the part of the lesson I don't like to teach. The one that tells you what not to do. Don't start it like this. A few days ago, Gwen Jones asked me to write on thinking, and since then, I've reflected considerably on the tough subject. You know, a few days ago, Betty Skinner asked me to write something for the NAV, and since then, I've been thinking. Of course, it was a big shock to your brain. Now, you might... This was written in 1887 by Edward Everett Hale, a well-known writer of his day. You may be in a lit course. You've got something by him. I think the writer should address himself at once to the real subject. I do not think there is any reason why he should tell people how he came to think of it, or why he learned about it, or in any way why he's talking about it. Either the subject is important or it is not. And if it is, the importance will establish itself as the writer goes on. If you have to explain to people why you're writing about a certain subject, you haven't got much to say. As he says, the importance of it should impress them as they go along. This was to a children's story. To children, which is even worse. What prompts me to write this little story? Listen, and I will tell you. At which time, everyone, all the children except the pious, put it down. It has been some time since our readers had a report from me. Many things have happened. This article is really, in my estimation, a beautiful article, in as much as it tells a personal experience of real salvation in order to seek the Lord. This was a missionary in the foreign field, and she put aside a week for the Lord and wouldn't even read her mail, which to me is a tremendous sacrifice. And yet, as far as I'm concerned, they limited the reader value because, first place, they called it Clearly Defined Principles of Spiritual Action. And then it's anonymous. The woman who wrote the article, after she had thought and prayed in her own heart and soul to tell of her experience, spends 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16 lines explaining why she's doing it. You know, I think if she's going to die to herself and tell about it, she ought to die all the way. She starts out, this article has a definite objective. Here's another one. Let us consider Bible characters whose lives manifested either stability or instability through adversity. The beauty of that is for teenagers, and I just know it appealed to them. They went right out and started playing baseball. Another beginning. I'm sure all of you would like this one. Be careful in choosing your friends. Even though they may seem well-mannered and neat, remember to consider indirectly his principles, his motive, and the character of his heart. This is by one of our well-known writers, spiritual writer, and yet I just realized as I picked it up that I never hear of the person being read anymore. And I can certainly see why. This is the opening. To understand and accept the truth of John 3 regarding the nature and necessity of regeneration, one must understand and accept the truth of Genesis 3 regarding the entrance of sin into humanity with resultant death, both physical and spiritual. The one necessitates the other, for the two truths are as closely related as cause and effect. This is in a college paper. To grow spiritually is one of the greatest teachings of the New Testament set forth in the following scriptures. And then they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16. 16 lines of scripture and 5 more lines explaining them. But you see, we do it all the time. And I say in our Christian circles, because I don't know any other circles. Maybe they do it in the other circles too. Here again, in this matter of being clever, or trying to be clever, this one for their opening, and it's an interesting opening. They tell how the tiger beetle has two eye spots upon the cover of his wings that make him look fierce-eyed, like a fierce-eyed something traveling in reverse. A katydid at rest cannot be distinguished from a green leaf without the most minute examination. And it tells how God has made animals and insects to look like nature. You know what the theme is? We should not resemble the world. Well, that's enough on how not to do it. All right, then you've got your reader's attention, you've started your opening, you've got your opening written. You do your main point. Your main point. Here, in one sense, is where you differ from your letter. We didn't necessarily try to tie the reader of the letter in until we came to the desire step. In the article, we do it almost immediately, because why should they read the article unless it is pertinent to them? Now, you've given them a clever opening, or as clever as you can. Now, you want to be fair with them. State clearly what you're going to talk about and relate it to them. And here is where, if you have a verse, if it is a devotional article, this is where you bring it in. This is where you lay your scriptural foundation. You've got your interest. By Ellie Maxwell. Many people have been praying for revival, but not everyone realizes that the task of God's servants to probe as well as to pray. And then he goes on to give his verse from Joel 2:12-18. Let the priests, the ministers of the Lord, weep between the porch and the altar. Basically, I like what Ellie Maxwell writes, both from a standpoint of truth and from a standpoint of presentation. However, in as much as I'm using this for an illustration, I want to say that I would have put this business of probe and to pray first, instead of the fact that everyone's been praying for revival, and I would have put his verse before his reference. But his truth is good, and his way of it. Here is the neglected parable, the Cinderella of parables. And then he goes on, I am the Alpha and the Omega. That is this forum's neglected parable. Riding in a taxi recently, I was startled when the driver suddenly slammed on the brakes. Looking out, I saw a burly policeman helping a wizened old lady across the street, blocking traffic in both directions around the congested corner. Watching, I wondered if the big cop were a Christian and how many Christians might have already passed this little lady and overlooked the opportunity for Christian service. The world has its standards of kindness and courtesy. But we have a much higher incentive. The love of Christ constrains us, as Jesus himself put it, and whosoever shall compel thee to go a mile, go with him twain. But you see how nicely she swings into it. With her little positive illustration, the policeman did it, took his time, helped the lady. She didn't say that the world was any less courteous than the Christian, but that we had a higher motive for our courtesy. All right, I like to stop someplace where I can pick up on a fresh thought, but I can't. I must stop, and yet I want to work further tomorrow on this matter of bringing the reader into what you're writing, of making it personal to them with a you emphasis. And if some of you, for some reason or other, cannot come tomorrow, when you sit down at your typewriter, remember the big thing is the person to whom your writing. Think of him and interest him and include him in your activity.